or lease from...
The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh, my gracious, Tim. How about that?
We just stepped on their face with a hot-nailed vision across their nose.
Clenzo strikes with a minute and a half left.
And now I welcome back the first guest of the second season of College Football Country. And who else would I have on but our very own Rossi Three Stacks? Or should I call you R Tutor Nine? I'm confused at this point. So the social media webs want to know.
We're kicking off with that, huh? That's the hottest debate in the streets right now. I think the poll you put out a couple weeks ago was a resounding like 80 to 90% that I should change my Twitter handle to at Rossi Three Stacks. Mm-hmm. I'm open to it, man. I've been thinking about it more. I've been praying about it. I've been really sleeping on it, and I think it's something I could do. My 381 followers might be confused at first, but I think it might be a good adjustment.
Well, have you put together like a pros and cons list? Like, what's keeping you from moving off of R Tutor 9? Do you have like an emotional connection to it at this point?
Yeah, how could you not have an emotional connection to a handle like that? You know, continuity between that and Instagram is big for me. So I might have to change my Insta as well.
Ooh.
You know, I think in the back of my mind initially, it was like, you know, I want something a little more professional, but not like I have really a professional following on R Tutor 9. So I'm warming up to it.
Well, I think the world is ready for it, honestly. You know, it goes back to this. Is R Tutor 9 really the most professional handle in the world? To me, the closest thing you've done professionally on social media is give out expert teaser picks for college football. So to me, this is the more professional handle between the two.
No, I'm with you.
So
I'm with you. As I mentioned, it's not like I have a large following in the pay-per-click advertising community at R Tutor 9. So you know what? Let's do it. I'm going to do it right now.
Live
on the podcast.
So if you're listening to this, this is not live, but for me and Ross, this is live. And the handle has gone from R2-9 to Rossi3Stacks just in time for football season, man. I think this is really going to help your profile go. You know, I've talked to some prospective large media conglomerates, and they've been asking me about Rossi3Stacks. And true story, somebody asked me, what's his Twitter handle? And I said, well, he's not the most active guy on Twitter. That did not help our case. But I think this is really going to help you.
All right, it's done.
At
Rossi Three Stacks.
Now, is it the letters three or the number three?
The letters, T-H-R-E-E,
mm-hmm.
And then Stacks with an X because we ran out of characters.
Hell yeah. Oh, no. The characters doesn't matter. You could have had all the characters you needed. It still would have been an X.
Yeah, all right. Well, I like it. It's official. At Rossi Three Stacks.
All
still
right.
Probably don't tell major media conglomerates about me, at least not yet. But the 300 – oh, for the 383 followers. I've had a big couple days here.
Ooh.
I lost 20 followers after I made an Andy Bitter joke about the Roanoke Times.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know. That might have been a coincidence, but it was about that time. Make a bad joke, lost 20 followers. So. Sorry, they'll come back.
They'll come back in droves. Well, excited for the podcast, man. We're going to have fun this year. I decided, you know, before the season started, I wanted to go through conference by conference and do the over-unders, and we'll start off with the ACC. And, you know, you seem to be an expert in all things UNC, so I might as well expand out to the ACC. As a matter of fact, last year when you did your teasers for the week, there was a overwhelming proportion of the – of the teasers that you handed out seem to be in one conference. So if you
bet what you know, man,
this is very true. So I'll go ahead and we'll call you the expert in the ACC, the official CFB Country ACC expert, correspondent maybe.
I accept. I was going to say vice president of Tar Heel operations initially, but we will say ACC maniac.
Yeah. Nice callback there. All right. So why don't we get started? So we're going to go through team by team, over under. We'll throw out the line, chop it up a bit on the team, a couple thoughts, and then give a pick. So I'll throw it out to you. University of Virginia, that's the first one. We're going to start with the worst teams, go worst to first. And UVA has the lowest win total at 5. So
yep.
How do you see the Cavaliers this year, my friend?
So I think UVA overachieved last year, as I think that's not really a hot take. I think everybody kind of understands that. Went to a bowl game. Good for Bronco. But even at that low win total of 5, I'm going to take UVA to go under. They got very lucky to win those 6 games last year. We'll touch on it in a second. But Brandon Harris, I think, went like 9-for-20 with 3 interceptions against them, and Carolina still almost beat them. UVA caught every break they could catch last year and maxed out at 6-6. They lost a lot. They lose Kurt Benkert. And the schedule is not that easy. I looked through. The only 2 wins that I see for sure on their schedule are Richmond and Liberty. And I'm not even 100% about those. I think they lose to Louisville, NC State, Miami, Duke, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech for sure. Even Ohio, I think when the Bobcats come to town in September, I think Ohio walks out of Lane Stadium with a win, or at least gives them all they want.
Lane Stadium.
Oh geez, Scott Stadium. I was already moving my eyes up the page.
All right. Well, I hope Ohio doesn't walk into Lane Stadium and come out with a win.
That won't happen. That won't happen. Lane Stadium's on my mind. Yeah. Anyway, UVA under 5 wins. I think they could even go like as bad as 2-10, but 3-9 or 4-8 is very likely.
Yeah, so I mean, it doesn't bode well when your head coach is telling the boosters that you only have 27 ACC caliber players on your team. I think that says a lot about the state of Virginia football right now. And man, this is the thing, UVA has no excuse to be this bad. Ever. And when Mike London was there, he recruited well. On paper, they recruited the Tidewater area as well as they probably ever have. At one point, really late in the Al Groh era and early in the Mike London era, I mean, they were pulling most of the kids. They were out-recruiting Virginia Tech in the state, no question.
They were certainly getting the cream of the crop. They were getting – they're pulling high 4-stars or 5-stars out of 757, yep. Mm-hmm.
And it just never panned out on the field and for one reason or another, but – It at this point, it's just getting embarrassing. I mean, I know it's been UVA is a punching bag for Virginia Tech fans, and they've won 14 years in a row in that series, and that's kind of UVA's mantra this year. It was the joke at ACC Media Day was that they have like a beat Tech posted up on their
in
on
the
their
bathroom.
Walls.
They've got beat Tech in the bathroom.
They got beat Tech in the bathroom. That was the quote of the summer. There were many, but Larry Fedora really overshadowed. It was Zacharias, right? Or Zacchaeus.
Zacchaeus.
Yeah, Zacchaeus. Whatever his name. Olamide Zacchaeus. Yeah, hey, the one who said we even want to beat
Put some respect on his name, man. He got an ACC Player of the Year vote.
Yeah, well, so did Brendan Motley a few years ago. I don't really think that means a whole hell of a lot.
No, I guess not.
Yeah, but
anyway, you know, that was more time maybe than we needed to spend on Virginia, but it's actually appropriate because as you'll see in a bit, I don't love a ton of these bets, but actually Virginia under 5 is one of my favorite ones of this whole slate.
Yeah, I mean, their non-conference is Richmond at Indiana, Ohio, and Liberty. And then when you get into the conference, I mean, the division, we'll go through the rest of the Coastal, of course, but I mean, the Coastal is not great. But it's also – there's no other team in the division that's objectively bad. It's just a lot of average teams until you get to maybe Virginia Tech and Miami. But Virginia is the only team in the league that's, I mean, bad. They'll be an underdog in every ACC game. I mean, maybe – I guess UNC and Pitt at home are their best chances to win in the conference. They play those back-to-back in late October, November. So even if they get those two, you're talking about them having to run the table in the non-conference to hit the over. It seems more likely than not that they don't hit that mark. We don't know anything about the quarterback, though. Bryce Perkins is the transfer. If he comes out and all of a sudden is better than advertised, maybe that bumps Virginia up to a 6-win team. But that's a big question. So I think the safe play is under 5, maybe a push. But I don't think they make a bowl for the second year in a row.
Yep,
all right.
Totally agree.
Let's move on to your boys, UNC, also in the Coastal Division. Their over-under is 5. And I'll open the floor up to you because you are the vice president of Tar Heel Operations for this podcast. Where do you see the Heels falling this year?
So last year obviously was a terrible year for the Tar Heels. They were, as you and I have talked about this separately, they were going to be like a 500 team last year no matter what. That was kind of their ceiling. They lost a lot.
Yep.
And at a program like UNC, you don't lose that much NFL talent and rebuild that quickly.
Right.
So a good year for them last year would have been like 7-5 if everything had gone well.
Yeah.
Everything went horribly. They did not catch any break they could have caught. They were horribly plagued by injuries, and that resulted in a 3-9 season. but they were also not as bad, other than against Virginia Tech. And I know a lot of listeners of this podcast will remember that game most fondly, and that was an ass-kicking of a lifetime.
59-7.
Other than that game, so they had a fourth-quarter lead against Louisville. They had a fourth-quarter lead against Duke. They had a fourth-quarter lead against Cal.
Yep.
They had the ball driving to beat Miami and UVA,
yep,
needing just a score to win. They had a late third-quarter lead against NC State late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
That's six games. If you win half of those, which I'd say, given the situation of the game, those are all toss-ups at that point, if not edge Carolina. If they go 3-3 in those instead of 0-6, this is a 6-6 team right where they were supposed to be, and I think we have a very different outlook of them going into this year. So all of that is to say, even with the suspensions and whatnot that were, you know, the big talking point this year, I think Carolina is a 6-6 team again this year. That's what a lot of the numerical projections, the S&P Plus is one I like a lot. When I look at this kind of stuff, they have them projected for 6.2 wins, which obviously is not possible, but over six. So Carolina over five, I think, is actually a really good bet. Now, they have, to your point, they're about as good as basically everyone on their schedule. I think they lose to Miami and Virginia Tech, and they will beat ECU and Western Carolina late in the season. And then the other eight games are toss-ups.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, though, I think it starts to average out a little bit in some of those toss-up games. If you assume maybe they go 4-4 this year, which is still not crushing it, but if just do maybe what they're supposed to do, what statistics would say they would,
yeah,
it puts you at 6-6.
Right. I mean, that's exactly how I look at this with every team. Is I look – anytime I'm trying to bet over-unders or just figure out where I think a team's going to fall during the season, I say, who are the locks? Who are the locks on the other end? Who are the teams they're guaranteed to lose to? And then where are the toss-ups? And then you just split the toss-ups right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
That usually gets you about where Vegas projects a team, but if there's a difference, yep, between a game or two, that's where you kind of start to see an advantage. I'm with you on that. I mean, Cal, on the road against Cal, probably a loss.
Yep.
And Cal's going to be a better team. But even that, I mean, that's far from a lock of a loss. I would put that in the toss-up category,
mm-hmm,
leaning more towards a loss. But East Carolina, they should win that game on the road. Central Florida at home is probably a loss. I mean, let's call it what it is. Central Florida is a better team. But would it shock you if UNC beat Central Florida?
It would not. I think Larry Fedora knows, especially with what a goofy offseason he's had and what a bad offseason it's been in general for Carolina. Their best recruit now plays in the Los Angeles Angels organization. This was actually a good move, but it's being spun smartly by other schools as a bad move. They decreased the capacity of Keenan Stadium, put in new, like, individual seat backs, which Alabama just announced they're doing. But it's being smartly saying, you know, we can't even fill the stadium. Obviously, Fedora goes off the rails with his comments at Media Day. He knows how important it is to get off to a good start this season, which is why they pushed back on some of those suspensions to get them to start.
Has he known that in any other year?
No, I think it's especially important
now
this year,
given
the perception of the program, though,
sure,
how important it is to get off to a hot start. The difference between them coming back for their first home game week three against Central Florida 2-0 versus 1-1 and the kind of excitement around that game that they could build up is huge. So that Cal game is probably much more important to the program than a normal, you know, Power 5 opener.
Yeah, so it looks like Larry Fedora has won his season opener once at UNC. What year did he take over? One year since 2013 they've won the season opener, and that was in 2014 against Liberty.
Betting against Larry Fedora when he has a large gap between games, season openers, bowl games, even after bye weeks, is almost always a good play. The guy, for whatever reason, is better on short weeks than long weeks, which you could argue does not speak too highly of his coaching.
I was going to say, it doesn't say a whole hell of a lot. When Larry Fedora has a lot of time to prepare, bet against him.
Yeah, I am pretty sure the numbers back that up.
Wow, that's not good. Well, my thought on UNC is a lot like yours. I actually would lean over too. This team was not as bad last year as people made it out to be. All of a sudden, Larry Fedora forgot how to coach football. This is what the media does. You see a record, and then, of course, what he did in July was funny and at some points a little horrifying, but at the same time, the guy has won a lot of football games over his career, and one season where he loses over half of his starting starting lineup to injury doesn't really change the fact that he's won a lot of games. So Carolina's going to be fine. The suspensions, really the impact on the field will be minimal. You know, they spread out those defensive end suspensions. Nathan Elliott might have won the starting quarterback job anyway. And people
they played a lot better with him under center at the end of the year, under center in the shotgun. This is a Larry Fedora offense.
that is accurate. So that's how I see Carolina. I'll say over as well. We're not really embracing debate very well right now, but
I think we've got a couple later on that we might disagree on.
They might even. I mean, 6-6 to me might even be the floor for this team. I mean, I think they have enough talent to win 7 or 8 games, and it hasn't been a great, 13 months or whatever for Fedora, but they could surprise people and win. They're not going to contend for the division.
No.
But they could win seven or maybe even eight games if those close games they lost a year ago when they had no depth because of injuries, they win this year because they're healthier.
Yep, no doubt.
All right, well, let's move on. So, Pittsburgh, we're staying in the Coastal. God, the Coastal is bad. Pittsburgh, 5.5 wins is the over-under for them. And speaking of another team that has not had a great 12 months,
right. It's been Pittsburgh. No, they sure haven't. So, my thought process is somebody besides UVA has to lose some games in the Coastal. I guess probably lots of those Coastal teams will lose games and can lose games. But Pitt's one of those teams that when I got to a lot of those toss-up games, I found myself leaning towards them losing. So I'm actually going with Pitt under 5.5 wins here. They have had a lot of people transfer out of that program. Not a ton of star players, but I think their depth is going to take a pretty significant hit.
And,
they lost just a lot of players. It's like 8 or 9 guys who were scholarship players. I mean, on probably a lot of the cases on the 2-deep, some were 4-star recruits that were, I think, being counted on to, if not contribute, to start. So Pitt lost a lot of dudes, and then mostly I think why I like the under here is their out of conference schedule is really tough. They play Penn State, at UCF, at Notre Dame, I guess is out of conference, quasi out of conference. So very likely their only out of conference win is Albany, which means in order to get to 6 wins total, they have to go 5-3 in the ACC. And I just don't see that. Even with crossover games at Wake and then home against Syracuse, at Wake is probably a loss, at best a toss-up.
Yeah.
So I think Pitt is an under. I could see them even 4-8, but I definitely like them going 5-7 and that under hitting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think between UVA and Pittsburgh, they're easily the two worst teams in the ACC, I mean, regardless of division. There's not a lot to like about this team. They went from, in 2016, where they had James Conner in the backfield, and, of course, Matt Canada running the offense, Nathan Peterman at quarterback. I mean, Peterman didn't look great with the Bills, but regardless, you had an NFL quarterback under center, and you had an NFL running back in the backfield. And to lose those guys, I mean, they took a huge step back last year. And a lot of those same cast of characters return, at least at the skill positions. I mean, Kenny Pickett is going to be the new quarterback.
Right.
We don't know what he's going to be able to bring to the table. Last year, threw for 500 yards, so we'll see what he does. With a full season. But I don't see a Nathan Peterman. I don't see a James Conner. I don't see anybody. And they certainly don't have a Matt Canada calling plays. Without Canada, I think Canada is the big one that you saw the huge difference. And they went from, 40 points a game to 23. They were next to last in points per game. The defense returned 7 guys. There's just not a lot to like about this Pitt team. I think they could win 3 games, maybe even 4. I mean, UVA is bad. I think Pitt might be just as bad. Outside of that, I guess when I was talking about UVA and the rest of the division being average, Pitt is bad as well. Those two teams, I think, are far and away worse than everybody else. Under there as well. We're agreeing everywhere around. But, I mean, I just don't see it. But Pitt might be the hardest one. You could feasibly convince me that UVA, if Perkins ends up being better than we think, that UVA ends up somehow getting to 6 wins. But Pitt, I don't see a path. Like you said, with the non-conference schedule, I don't see a path to where they get to 6. It just doesn't seem possible. But now a team 5.5, where this is a team that's had a lot of success in the past, more than maybe the other teams we've talked about. Georgia Tech. So Georgia Tech is 5.5, another team in the Coastal. It's crazy all these teams in the Coastal are at 5.5 or under. I mean,
yeah, it's bizarre. And Georgia Tech for me is the toughest one, maybe in the whole conference, to peg. I look at them like a knuckleballer. I think probably a lot of people have made that comparison over the years. They're just such a goofy team to play that I have them as a, well, maybe could beat Clemson, and I also have them probably losing to Duke, right? So they're just like, they're all over the board. I could argue that all of their games should be toss-ups except for maybe Alcorn State. So they're, yeah, like you said, 5.5. They lose a lot on defense. They're 108th in the country in returning defensive production, mm-hmm. Which is darn near the bottom. They do bring back their quarterback. They bring back a good bit on offense. They have a tough schedule, though. So their Atlantic crossovers are Clemson, like I said, and at Louisville. So tough games there. They play Georgia and their other non-conference at UCF. And then also Bowling Green and Alcorn State. So their three wins.
They play South Florida.
I'm sorry. Yes, South Florida. Alcorn State, Bowling Green, UVA, I think are wins. I think Clemson at Louisville, Miami, and Georgia are probably losses. And then five toss-ups at South Florida, at Pitt, probably a win per our previous discussion, Duke at UNC. And then until Virginia Tech proves to me that they can beat a Georgia Tech team they're supposed to beat,
yeah,
I have to put that game as a toss-up.
Sure.
So Pitt or Georgia Tech, either way, I'm going to go under because of that defensive production. I'm going to say that they also lose a good bit of games in the Coastal. They lose both of their Atlantic crossovers. They obviously are going to lose to Georgia. I think Georgia Tech goes 5-7. I think that is a hotter take. So I think a lot of teams, a lot of people have them pegged as a potential dark horse in the Coastal.
Yeah, I'm actually going to fall in line with that. I don't think they win the division, but they certainly, again, it wouldn't shock me. And mm-hmm. if you go at 5.5 is the over-under, the locks for me, of course, Alcorn State. I think Pitt's a lock. I think Bowling Green's a lock. That's three. Duke at home, I lean win. Not a lock, but I lean towards a win. That's four. And then you get Virginia. That should be a lock. That's five. Now mm-hmm. you look at the other seven games on their schedule. They've got to win one of those to get over the 5.5 mark. You know, if you feel like Pitt's more of a toss-up, or if you feel like Duke is, like I said, I lean towards Georgia Tech beating Duke at home, but, you know, Georgia Tech's a knuckleball.
Right.
No, I get it. But I think this Georgia Tech team is good. They do replace a lot on defense. I get it. But they also return nine guys on offense. And this team,
right,
you pretty much plug anybody into that offense, and you know what you're going to get from Paul Johnson. They were number one in the country, of course, in rushing yards a game. That's no secret. That's no surprise, rather. They were middle of the road in scoring. They were 28 points a game. I think that gets up over 30 this year. I think they're a pretty high-powered offense for what they are. They return everybody in the backfield. They return Quasers.
Mm-hmm.
They return Cravante Benson. Those guys, having continuity in that offense, I think, is huge. Because they plug and play, but usually the years in which Georgia Tech has been better has been years when they've had guys with multiple years under their belt. If you think back to Justin Thomas or Josh Nesbitt, guys like that, they've been better in those years. So I think Georgia Tech's going to go over. I appreciate the bold take, though, going under.
Yeah.
Because I mean, all of these teams at 5, 5.5, some, I don't understand how all these teams can be that bad. I think some of these teams are better than maybe Vegas is giving them credit for. Georgia Tech, one of them. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I would have pegged them more at like a 7.5 over under. That actually might be the bet I'm most confident in so far is Georgia Tech over. Yeah.
So interestingly, and I mentioned the S&P Plus or whatever. I don't know if you're familiar with that metric or
yeah.
not. Bill Connolly's big thing. They're projected 5.3 wins using that. I mean, if you don't know, it's basically a combination of returning production with different factors weighted more heavily than others, obviously taking the schedule into account, and it gives you a certain win probability for each game, and it comes out to 5.3. So that was kind of my statistical reason behind that. It felt weird saying Georgia Tech 5-7, especially with all the chatter about them. And I'm like you. It would not surprise me at all if Georgia Tech goes 6-6 or even 7-5. And I probably will not bet on this one. But for the interest of discussion, I think I could see that defense really, you know, biting them in the butt and going 5-7. Wouldn't shock me either.
Since when do you use advanced stats? you've referenced S&P Plus like five times in this podcast.
I love that stuff, man. If I'm gonna make bets for a season long thing, I need to do my research.
See, I liked it last year when you were giving me like eye test, and I think this team's better as your reason. Now you're gonna start making money, and now you're gonna start to get your head's gonna get big. Last year it was. I guess you learned your lesson when we gave out our lock of the year as UMass Georgia.
You said UMass. All right, two things about that. One, I can't tease season win totals. If I could, I would. And two, I haven't seen any games yet, so there's no eye test. All I can do is read message boards, and wouldn't you know it, everybody's looking great. So there's nothing for me to go on the eye test yet.
There's a lot of teams. There are a lot of defenses flying around right now.
Everybody's flying around, dude. The game has slowed down so much for everybody. 11 hats to the football on every play. It's looking good all over. So I actually might need to go over on all of these teams based on the message board index.
Yeah. Oh, man, a lot of teams taking it one day at a time. All right, Boston College. Finally get an Atlantic team in here. Jeez, they're also 5.5. Let's quickly go through the Eagles.
Yeah, so tough break for them with their ACC crossover opponents, Miami and at Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
But I still actually think Boston College goes over 5.5. They're going to be good. They bring back a lot of dudes. They showed a lot of promise last year.
I see what you did there.
Guys being dudes. They get UMass, Holy Cross, and Temple out of conference. I think they win all three of those. They get Syracuse at home. I think that's a win. I think they lose to Clemson, Virginia Tech, FSU, and Miami. Like, that's just as tough as it gets in the ACC. And then toss-ups, home against Wake, home against Louisville, at NC State, and at Purdue early in the season is actually a pretty big swing game for them. I still think they go 6-6. I think they win two of those toss-ups, maybe Wake, maybe Louisville, maybe at Purdue, and get the six wins.
So the schedule isn't kind to them. That's the big thing here. I'm staying away from this one. I mean, if I had to make a bet, I mean, I'll go through it right now. UMass a lock, Holy Cross a lock. Wake. Now they're getting Wake without Kendall Hinton. He's going to miss the first three games quarterback for Wake. So that makes that game a little more winnable. It's on the road. Hey, give them that one. Say it's three. I think they lose to Purdue. I think Purdue's going to be pretty good this year. Shout out to Tim Brando. Temple is going to be the next one. So that's four. And then, God, I mean, at NC State, that's a loss. NC State's going to be – I think NC State's a top 15 team. We'll talk about them soon. Louisville at home, even if that's a win, that's five. They would have to beat Syracuse at the end of the season, and I'm being generous trying to get them just to five wins before even that Syracuse game. I would lean under.
Really?
And it's a shame because I think this team is good. I mean, I agree with you. They have a lot of talent, but I mean, dude, they play Miami, Virginia Tech, Clemson, Florida State.
No, truly,
four straight games, not just all in the season, back to back to back to back. They play the four best teams in the conference. That is insane.
It gets quite literally as tough as it gets in the ACC. God. No, I'm with you. If you swapped their schedule with, I mean, even Virginia Tech's schedule, I mean, this is call it North Carolina's schedule.
Yeah.
I'm very confident this team wins at least seven games.
Yeah. Yeah, and man, if they had a more manageable schedule, this could be a huge year for BC to build a lot of momentum because they have been getting better. Nobody's really paying attention, but Adazio has done a good job. I mean, last year they started off slowly and the offense was a wreck, and then as soon as they beat Louisville, they hit the ground running. I mean, they beat Louisville in a shootout. They crushed UVA, and then that big blowout win against a Florida State team that had no intention of being in Chestnut Hill. But yeah, that was they built a lot of positive momentum, and it's a shame that their schedule, I think, this year it's going to be the exact opposite. I mean, I see this team really going into a free fall in late October. All right, well let's move on because we want to get to the bigger team. So Wake at six, still in the Atlantic, the Nick Wilson special here. How do you feel about the screaming Demon Deacons? Claw.
Well, yeah, the Claw. Good segue getting into better teams with Wake.
Okay.
So,
Jesus.
So I think the line on Wake is exactly right. I think six. I think they go 6-6. But the way I have it broken down, wins in my mind against Tulane, Towson, Rice, Syracuse, and Pitt. Losses for sure to Notre Dame, Clemson, at Florida State. You'll put NC State in that lineup. We'll get to why I don't necessarily agree with that. And then toss-ups against Boston College, at Duke, and at Louisville. So same kind of logic. I have five wins right off the bat and then a couple of toss-ups. So I think they get to six. I like the floor there of a push. But I think Wake could be 7-5. I think 7-5 is more likely than 5-7.
So nobody's paid attention to Wake Forest because they're Wake Forest. But over the last few years with Clawson, he's done something that I thought was pretty innovative where – he sacrificed wins in the first two seasons at Wake. He basically recruited his tail off and tried to find young, you know, of course, that's all what you're always going to do at Wake is find those diamonds in the rough, but he played them. He played a really young team for a few years, and last year it started to pay off, especially on the lines. He had an offensive line last year that was very experienced. He returns all five starters again this year, and those guys that were freshmen, you know, 3 years ago are now seniors. They have four starters on the line, or four senior starters on the line, and then a junior. That's huge. I mean, that's something that most people won't pay attention to. But to have that sort of experience is incredible. Kendall Hinton, I mentioned before, he's suspended for three games, but it's Tulane, Towson, and Boston College. I mean, they're 2-1 at worst without Kendall Hinton. So when they get him back, you hit the meat of the schedule. Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame, when they played them last year, that was a hell of a game. And it was kind of off the radar, but 48-37, they lost on the road. That was a game that they stood toe-to-toe with the Irish. Getting them at home, that's not automatically a loss. Notre Dame's going to be good, but Wake could contend with them. They'll beat Rice. You could – best case scenario, if they somehow get by BC, I mean, they could conceivably be 5-0. 4-1 I could certainly see going out of September. Mm-hmm. And then you start to get into Clemson, Florida State. I mean, I could see this team being around six wins. I don't think they're going to win 10 like my co-host on my radio show thinks. but I do – I think this team is right around six. I don't have a feeling one way or the other. I'll say push. If anything, I would lean over, but this is not one that I'll be putting any of my paycheck invested into. So, all right, so that's Wake. Let's move on to Syracuse, another Atlantic team. So now we have the run of Atlantics here. So Syracuse is an interesting one. They're over under a six, and some people – I think you get a really different – you can get a different opinion on Syracuse depending on who you talk to.
Yep. Well, I'll give you one of those opinions. I'm going under. This was one of the easier ones for me. So Syracuse, they're in the bottom half nationally in returning production. I'll break out the S&P Plus again. Their projection there is 4.9, which was the second biggest differential in the conference between what their over-under is and what their projection is there, UNC being the largest differential. So I think Syracuse catches the wrong end of most of these toss-ups. I think their wins, Wagner, UConn, and probably Western Michigan. I think definite losses at Clemson, Notre Dame, Louisville, at Boston College, FSU, and at Wake. And then toss-ups, home against NC State, home against UNC, and at Pitt. So even basically gets a six under that scenario, they have to win all three of those toss-ups. And I think certainly the NC State game, probably the UNC game, are not really toss-ups. Those are probably more like 60-40. I think Syracuse could very conceivably go 4-8. I think 5-7 is more likely.
So Syracuse is funny because Dino Babers has gotten a lot of love for winning essentially two big games since he got to Syracuse. They beat Virginia Tech 2 years ago at home. They beat Clemson last year at home. Outside of that, they haven't been that great. And Eric Dungy is back at quarterback. He had a great year last year.
When healthy.
When healthy, he's been good. He's actually a better runner than I think people will give him credit for.
And I think that's why he's often not that healthy, because the dude plays with a reckless abandon, like jumping over people, drop-kicking people. And it's cool. Like, it's great for the internet, and it makes good highlight clips, but it gets him hurt. And they suck when he hurts, when he is hurt.
That guy, there were so many times last year. I mean, he was like a wounded animal at quarterback so many times last year, where you almost could see the blood coming through the jersey. I mean, he wouldn't come out of the game.
Yep. And
they couldn't afford for him to come out of the game.
He was in the Michael Brewer category, where I just will always picture Michael Brewer as having a giant piece of turf in his face mask.
Seriously.
I just assume that Dungy is always limping because he just tried to drop kick somebody.
He's got like the tissue plugged up his nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's Eric Dungy. All right. So let's look here. Western Michigan win. Wagner is a win. Connecticut is a win. That's three. UNC toss up. That's a 50-50 one. Pittsburgh on the, they play Pittsburgh on the road, Wake on the road. So some of their easier opponents are on the road. So that's good. You're getting the better teams at least at home. Like NC State at home, that game could turn into a shootout. I'm not going to be as easy to jump on the under. I also don't think this is an easy over player by any stretch. But I think they could get to a bowl game. And if the over under is at 6, I mean, I think that's right, just about right. I think the team could fall one way or the other. But I wouldn't be. I'm not as strong on going under as you are. I think this team is max is out at 7 wins, but 6 seems about right for me. Let's go to Duke. So back to the Coastal, 6.5 Blue Devils. How do you see this playing out for the Dukies?
So Duke is actually one of the teams that brings back the most this year, not just in the conference, but in the whole country. That line at 6.5 is tough for me, not because I don't think Duke is going to be pretty good, but because they, too, have a very tough schedule. So non-conference, they're at Northwestern, they're at Baylor, and then they have wins against Army and UNC Central. And then Virginia in conference. So I look at their schedule. I see 3 wins. I see Army, NC Central, and Virginia. I see 3 losses at Miami, at Clemson, and home against Virginia Tech. And then, like all these other teams, I think at Northwestern's a toss-up. I think at Baylor's a toss-up. Georgia Tech, at Pitt, UNC, and Wake. I think everything on their schedule is a coin flip. And so with that in mind, this is a bolder one. But I'm going to go under. I think Duke is exactly 6-6 because I think they dropped one or two of those non-conference games, and then I think UNC and/or Wake beats them. I don't know that they can get to 7.
Yeah, that was a bold prediction going with Vegas. Really going out on a limb there, Ross.
What? I went under 6.5.
Oh, I thought you said. Well, I guess it is 6.5. Okay, all right. Bold prediction going a half win under the Vegas line.
Bold in the sense that I would ordinarily say very positive things about them. They bring back their quarterback, who I think is very good.
Yeah, you say a lot of nice things about Duke. That's true. The vice president of Tar Heel Operations.
I have no bones to pick with Duke on the football field. They've beaten Carolina a couple times in a row, but my issues are with Zion Williamson.
Honestly, I would go over if Zion came out for the football team.
Yeah.
That dude would be the best player on their team.
The best tight end of all time.
He would be a monster. He is honestly. He looks like he might be trying to play O-line, the way he looked.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Did you hear that he actually weighs 400 pounds? It's cool. They talk about it on ESPN a lot.
Have you caught any of the ESPN Plus broadcast?
Yeah, no, it is really good. I've been appreciative of all the Duke coverage.
I mean, with all the national titles that they've won in the last few years, it's good to see that they're getting their due.
Mm-hmm. For sure. No, it's good for them. Well, I hope Zion comes out to the team, and if he does, I will push them over. Otherwise, I'm sticking my flag in Duke under 6.5.
Okay, so it's an under barring a Zion Williamson appearance. All right, fine. I'll go.
That's a fair hedge.
I think so, too. Army's a win. I don't think Baylor's a win. I mean, Baylor's going to be a lot better than they were a year ago.
Yeah, Baylor also brings back basically everybody.
Yeah. So Army, NC Central are wins. I think they could beat Virginia Tech. You put that in the loss category. That's a toss-up to me. Early in the season, Virginia Tech's still going to be young.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech's going to lose some games, at least a game. They've done it. This is the worst team that Justin Fuente's had, and they've lost games they shouldn't every year. This screams to me a game that they could lose in late September. So I think that's a toss-up. Virginia is a win. UNC, I mean, it's a toss-up in a rivalry game. Yeah, I mean, I think this team is probably a 5-7, 5-7 to 7-5 again. I don't have a strong lean either way.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're absolutely degenerate and you have to put money on it, I would go under. But I don't think Duke is going to be as great as everybody expects. I like Daniel Jones. I like TJ Romming. How the hell is that guy still in college?
Man, when we were prepping to do this, which was not a ton, admittedly, but I went pretty deep in some of the Bill Connelly SB Nation previews.
I know.
And some of the names that are still in college are Clayton Thorson at Northwestern. We for sure won money off of that dude when he was a freshman at Northwestern.
Yeah.
Back when daily college fantasy was allowed.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, TJ Romming, good Lord. Looking at their roster, I genuinely did not remember that he was still there. Wow. All right, now we're getting to the good stuff. NC State in the Atlantic. So they're they're over under a 7. Sounds like you might have some different thoughts than I do. What do you think about
the bet? I think I have different thoughts about the team. I do not have different thoughts about the bet. I think this is an easy over, but I'm not as bullish on NC State as you are. They're replacing their entire D-line. They're very young at linebacker in the secondary and in the secondary. They do bring back, obviously, Ryan Finley, some stud receivers, three offensive linemen. So I think the offense is going to be very good. Don't sleep on the impact of losing Nyheim Hines and Jalen Samuels, though.
Yeah.
Those guys both had over 1,000 yards from scrimmage last year, most of them against North Carolina. But those, Hines especially, in my mind, I mean, Samuels got most of the press, I guess, but Hines was a game breaker.
Yeah.
And he was, I think, close to 1,300 yards from scrimmage. So all that being said, I do think their offense is going to be very good again. When you bring back that kind of continuity in the passing game especially, I love the overs in those games. I think the defense is going to take a large step back. Second worst in the country in terms of returning defensive production. That being said, their schedule sets up for them to start really hot. I think they have wins against JMU, Georgia State, Marshall early in the year. West Virginia game is a big swing game for them. If they beat West Virginia early in the year, they could very conceivably walk into Clemson undefeated, and that becomes a big-time game. So I think the aforementioned JMU, Georgia State, Marshall, I think those are wins. At Syracuse is a win. Virginia is a win. Their only loss that I see on here is Clemson, for sure, and everything else is a toss-up. So I think they could go 9-3. I don't think they are like the dark horse team that could, you know, make a huge run and make a ton of noise nationally. But I think 8-4, 9-3 is a fairly safe bet.
Yeah. So the cynic in me wants to say that State goes 8-4 just because that's what State does. I mean, whenever anybody thinks that State could make a run, they end up not. I mean, having said that, they have a chance if they get past West Virginia to play in probably the most important game in the history of the program at Clemson in late October. I mean, if they're undefeated going into that game, you have to imagine they're going to be, if not in the top 10, right on the cusp. And that, to me, that game all of a sudden becomes, if not the biggest, one of the biggest games they've ever played. Clemson has lost at home. I mean, one of the biggest, I think, misconceptions about Clemson of the last few years is that they are just an automatic win in Death Valley. They almost lost to NC State 2 years ago at home. If NC State makes a field goal at the end of the fourth quarter, we're not talking about Clemson as a national champion. I mean, they would have lost that game, and they don't even make the playoffs. So I think NC State has a chance to go into that game. Now, they're not going to sneak up on Clemson if they're undefeated. It's not going to be that situation, but I understand they're losing a lot on defense. I don't think college football is really about defense. If you have a bad defense and a great offense, I think you could win just about any game you play. I mean, look no further than a lot of these teams in the Big 12. And the thing about NC State's defense is it's not great. But how many offenses in the ACC are really going to exploit that? It's not like there's a lot of – this is a down year for quarterbacks in the conference, which means it's a down year really for offenses in general in the conference.
Right.
There's not a lot of great talent under center outside of Ryan Finley. I mean, there's just not a lot of great quarterbacks that are going to, I think, carve up NC State. They're going to get off to a hot start. I think the lock of the year might be the over in the West Virginia game.
Totally agree.
That game's going to be the first to 100.
To your point, though, that's a quarterback who could torch them. And will.
Yeah. These teams are almost identical, though. I mean, it's scary how similar NC State and West Virginia are. They have great maybe the two best pro-style quarterbacks in the country, tremendous experience at receiver, lost a lot on defense, and we don't know if they're going to be able to stop anybody. I mean, those two teams are almost identical, and NC State gets it at home. They've won a lot of big games at Carter-Finley, and even if they haven't won, when they've played elite teams, they always show up for those big games at home. I like State to win that game. I think State gets off to that 7-0. Would it be 7? Yeah, 7. Or no, a 6-0 start.
6-0
start.
Going into Clemson.
Going into Clemson. Man, I hope that happens. And I'm not a State fan. I don't have any bias towards the Pack, but I think that would be awesome to see Clemson be tested in a game like that against somebody other than Florida State or Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I agree. It would be great for the conference. It would be fun to watch. But I like 8-4 or 9-3. I like the over here, but it also wouldn't shock me to see them lose to West Virginia early, get upset by Boston College early, and go into that game 4-2.
That's the State thing to do.
Wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
But over for sure.
Man, if they somehow, I mean, if they're 6-0 and they somehow get Clemson, you're looking at a team that could run the table. I mean, it's not likely. I get it. There's less than a probably 5% chance it happens. But, I mean, there's really one game on this schedule where you're like, yeah, that's probably a loss. I mean, outside of that, every other game is a toss up at worst. So I like the over in that one. But again, it is NC State, so – I would probably, if you're listening, listen to Ross. Don't listen to me. All right. So Louisville also at 7 wins. This blows my mind. I mean, that they have the same win total as NC State. But what do you think of the Cardinals?
So I actually think 7 is a really good number here. I don't know that I see 6 losses. So I don't know. I don't know. I think things would have to go pretty badly for them to go 6-6 with the schedule the way it is. But I also don't really see them going like 8-4. I think 7-5 is spot on. The S&P plus 7.1 wins, like right on the nose.
Yeah.
Wins against Indiana State, Western Kentucky, I think at UVA, at Syracuse, and I say home against Kentucky, but that's probably a toss-up game.
Yeah, Kentucky's good.
Yeah, that's a toss-up game. Losses, Alabama and Clemson, that's tough. And then toss-ups, FSU at home, at Boston College, Wake, NC State, Georgia Tech. So it could go a lot of different ways. I don't like this bet at all. I'll say, I mean, I might even just say push. I just say they go exactly 7-5. Can I bet that?
Just hit just the exacta. Just go right for it.
Yeah.
That should be allowed. All right. Well, I'll talk to Todd Furman, see if he can get that. His buddies in Vegas
Thank to
allow
you.
That. That would be great. All right. So it's like a roulette wheel. You should be able to play the number.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Yeah. We'll work on that.
All right.
So the nice thing for Louisville is that usually when a team plays Alabama, there's a hangover for like 3 weeks. But Louisville's going to be hungover against Indiana State and Western Kentucky.
All right.
Virginia. So they kind of get to lick their wounds for almost a month before they get Florida State at home. You put that in the toss-up category. I, as we will talk about in a minute, I actually think Florida State is going to be much better than I think the common perception is. So I actually think they lose that game even at home. And then Georgia Tech at home, they play a lot of their toughest games, thankfully, at home. But Georgia Tech could beat them. I mean, Boston College, then on the road. I think this is under. I think Louisville is 4-8, 5-7. I think they take a big,
really?
I think they take a big step back. Lamar Jackson carried that team for the last few years, and they weren't even that great. I mean, they really weren't, especially last year. They were 8-5, 4-4 in the ACC. They barely beat Florida State. They struggled in several other conference games, or I guess several other games in general. Purdue early in the year was another one that they had a hard time with. That was the one I was thinking of. UNC, even that was the one too. So early in the year, they were lucky to get those wins. I think Louisville misses a bowl game. I like this under. I'm surprised to hear that your buddy Bill Connolly has him at 7.1, because I actually think this team is much worse. The fact that Louisville and NC State have the same win total to me is one of the most shocking things that I know.
It is a little bit surprising. So the only counterpoint there is, when has Petrino been bad?
The Atlanta Falcons.
Okay. In college football, when has he had just like a bad team?
That's fair.
I think, you know, and this is probably a more traditional Petrino team. No, you lose Lamar Jackson, and everything will look different because of that. But I don't think they're going to be good. Like, I don't even think they win 8 games. But I think 7-5. I think you're probably talking me into 6-6 a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they miss a bowl game.
It just scares me when you've got a guy that you've relied on so much to do everything for your team. And they had other great players. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Lamar got the headlines. But at the end of the day, I mean, when in doubt, they just let Lamar loose, and he pretty much was their saving grace. When you lose a guy like that, see, it makes me nervous when you got teams that – I mean, Texas A&M is a great example of this too, where you win a lot of games because of one player, and then when he's gone, you think you're better than you are.
Right.
And I think, you know, this is total speculation, but I could see Louisville kind of thinking of themselves as someone that belongs in the same breath as Clemson and Florida State in the Atlantic. And in reality, that was pretty much just that was a byproduct of Lamar. And now that he's gone, I think they could be in for a reality check, and I just don't love the schedule. So I'll say under. I like the under for Louisville pretty confidently. Florida State, we got a few teams left. These are really the now we get into the teams ranked in the top 25. So
yeah, 45 minutes in.
That's okay. Seminoles,
bowl teams.
We saved the best for last. 7.5 for Florida State. How do you think the Noles shake out with that 7.5 line?
I'm like you. I like over here. Yeah. Now, I don't know that it'll be a ton over because the schedule is fairly tough, but I do think I'm with you. I think they are way more talented. I think people have forgotten, because they were not that good last year,
right,
that this is a very talented team. And in college football, I will almost always bet on the more talented team,
right?
So wins, you know, Samford at Syracuse, Northern Illinois, probably Wake and Boston College at home, probably Virginia Tech at home. That's probably more of a toss-up, but if I had to bet on that straight up, I would say Florida State would probably win that one. At Miami, home against Clemson, at Notre Dame are losses, and then at Louisville, at NC State, and home against Florida, also toss-ups. It's a tough schedule, but I do think they win some of those toss-ups. I could even see them upsetting Miami or even Notre Dame, but more likely Miami in that case. I think they get to 8-4. I think they could have a very good year and be 8-4 just with that schedule.
The easy, I guess, detractor is against Florida State. The reason why you would not bet the over, I guess, a 7.5, which still seems absurdly low, is how good is Willie Taggart? What's the situation at quarterback? And can they manage that schedule? But keep in mind, like you said, I'll always side with talent. Florida State has had a top five recruiting class each year from 2013 through 2017. Okay, so all of those guys, all of those recruiting classes now make up the roster for this Florida State team.
Right.
So from a talent standpoint, they have – it, to me, one of the six or seven, at worst, most talented teams. Most talented. That doesn't mean the best, but most talented teams in the entire country. And I'm going to side with Florida State here. I mean, to get a team with that much talent at 7.5 is obscene to me. I think they're going to beat Virginia Tech. I'm going to that game, and I'm not optimistic about the Hokies. I think they beat Virginia Tech. Then you get Samford, Syracuse, Northern Illinois. They're 4-0. I think they beat Louisville, like I said, 5-0. Then you get the Miami game. That's on the road, but that's always a nail biter one way or the other. They could start 6-0, then Wake at home 7-0. I think Florida State's 7-0 going into the Clemson game.
Wow.
And then Clemson, I mean, remember, Clemson's going to be coming off of playing NC State the week before. So win or lose, Clemson's going to have a really a tough game that they're going to be coming off of. And meanwhile, Florida State will be coming off of Wake Forest. So I think Florida State has a great chance to, once again, like I said, start 7-0, and then they get that Clemson game. Do not be surprised if they beat Clemson at home. I think they have that much talent. It's just going to be a matter of quarterback. I mean, is it going to be James Blackman? Is it going to be DeAndre Francois? I believe it should be Francois. I understand the reasons why it shouldn't be. He's had some off-the-field concerns. He was, there was some marijuana issues a couple times this offseason, and you never want to hear that from your quarterback. But I do think that he's the more talented guy. I mean, with him under center last year, they were preseason number 3. I mean, they were supposed to be a national championship contender, and they return 8 guys on that offense around him. Defensively, there are a lot of new faces, but they're extremely talented. I mean, some guys that I think people should know, Marvin Wilson was a 5-star defensive tackle. He's now a sophomore. He's going to start. He was, to me, everybody knows about Ed Oliver, but Marvin Wilson was in a similar mold to Ed Oliver at defensive tackle. Josh Kando is a defensive end. He's going to be an absolute freak. Nobody knows his name unless you follow recruiting, but the guy was another All-American. I saw him up close and personal at the Under Armour All-American practices a couple years ago, and he was the most dominant guy for the entire week at those practices. And to see Marvin Wilson and him side by side, and to think that they were both going to play together, those are two new starters, but I mean, those guys are future NFL players. So I think the defensive line is outstanding. In the secondary, Stanford Samuels the third is a great guy. Levante Taylor is going to be a first-round pick at corner. They've got more NFL talent on that team than anybody in the conference not named Clemson. So I think this team is a national championship contender. I mean, and somebody always makes a run from outside the top 10 and surprises folks. And Florida State, you wouldn't think of Florida State as a surprise team when you hear that, but they're ranked 19th in the AP poll, and I think they're, if they live up to their the potential that they have, and Willie Taggart's able to keep the team kind of the continuity of that team week to week, which Jimbo Fisher couldn't do last year, I think that they are they're in the mix. I think they're in the mix. Even if they lose to Clemson, this is still a team that could win 11 games. So Florida State, I go way over. But let's keep going. Let's finish up here.
Okay.
We got three more teams. Virginia Tech. We've got the Hokies at 8.5. 8.5 in the coast.
Yep.
What do you think about the Hokies?
So, and this is not one I'm going to bet, because I think that's a really tough line. And I also lean towards the under, and I'm not going to bet against Tech to go under. So basically the way I look at it, I think you have to assume there are three likely losses on the schedule. At Florida State, and then I know they're both at home, but Notre Dame and Miami will both be favored against Virginia Tech. You could call those toss-ups. Would it shock you if they won one of those? No. But for these purposes, I would put them probably in the loss category. And then you have toss-ups at Duke, at UNC, and then home against Boston College and Georgia Tech. Those are conceivable losses with this team. Tech lost a lot, especially on defense. I mean, it's well documented how much they lost this offseason, either by just natural attrition or, you know, players getting suspended, kicked off the team, hurt, whatever the case may be. If Tech goes 9-3 with this team, that is an unreal coaching job.
Yeah.
Absolutely unreal coaching job if they go 9-3 with this team. So with that in mind, I still think they'll get to 8-4. I don't think the schedule's all that hard, which is their saving grace this year with this team. If there's ever a year to have an easier kind of schedule, specifically non-conference, this is the year to have it. So I will say under 8-4, but I'm not going to touch it.
Yeah, I actually would say the under as well. I think 8-4 is a really good number. Absolute best case, like you said, 9-3. I think the Notre Dame game, I think they could be favored against Notre Dame. I know that right now some people are kind of high on the Irish, but
yeah,
getting that game at home, I think that game is a toss-up for Virginia Tech. Miami, I don't think Miami's if you listen to me, you know how I feel about Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I think that team gets way more credit than they deserve, but they're better than Virginia Tech. They showed it last year. I mean, they dominated Virginia Tech in that game down in Miami, but this team is so young, they're going to lose some games they shouldn't. I mean, that's just reality. I think they could lose to Duke. I think they could lose to Georgia Tech. I think they could lose to Boston College. I mean, among those three, I think they go 2-1 at best. I think they lose one of those games. Justin Fuente has done a remarkable job, but he's lost a game each of the last 2 years that just makes you scratch your head. And with that in mind, I think this year is no different. I mean, last year it was Georgia Tech where they just kind of laid an egg coming off the Miami game. And then 2 years ago it was, of course, Syracuse. They're good for a dud, and then they would have to just absolutely light the world on fire to win all of those tougher games. I think that this is an 8-4 team, maybe even 7-5. And the thing about Virginia Tech that I think is going to be really frustrating for me, because of how many people follow me and want to hear my opinion on Virginia Tech, is, listen, this year is a rebuilding year. This year is not a reflection on Justin Fuente. And even if they take a step back and they win seven games, that doesn't mean the program's going in the wrong direction. Because next year they're going to bring back 10 guys on defense. And they're going to bring back eight or nine guys on offense. They've recruited well in the offensive line, which is the only area where they're going to lose multiple starters. This team's going to be really good in 2019 and 2020. They just have so many guys who are sophomores and even freshmen who are playing on this team. I mean, you're talking about some young, young players, especially on defense, who are going to be playing huge roles on this team. The secondary, it's all young guys. I mean, Caleb Farley and Bryce Watts, they lost Jeremy Webb to an injury. He'll be back for a year from now. We're talking about 2018, but I mean, just 2019 is the year for Virginia Tech. The schedule is going to be a piece of cake. They're going to be a 10-win or maybe even 11-win team a year from now, and 2020 will be great as well. So, Josh,
all right, I'll pencil you in for the over 10.5 next season.
You probably can. Josh Jackson, they're going to go as far as he takes them this year. Can he elevate those young receivers? Sean Savoy had flashes last year that showed he could be a number one guy. Then it's just among those other six or seven young receivers who who steps up? Is it Hezekiah Grimsley? Is it Arakuma? Hazleton, the transfer from Ball State, has been getting a lot of attention. And they've got talent. Justin Fuente has recruited speed. He has prioritized that. He did it at Memphis. He did it before at TCU. He finally has an offense, while young and inexperienced, that physically fits what he wants to do. So with that in mind, I think that they this is a great year for them to get a lot of experience under their belt with a team that, that really has no expectations. And I would bet the under if I was a betting man. I will not bet the under for Virginia Tech. I just won't do it. Yep. I don't want to root against them. But my brain says this is a 8-win team, maybe even a 7-win team. They'll make a bowl. I mean, there's no question. This team.
Oh, for sure.
This team's not going to go 5-7.
They're going to be good. Yeah. And they'll go, well, 3-1 for sure out of conference.
Yeah.
They're going to be fine. But no, I'm with you. I think they go 8-4 and have a good year. But that would still make the under. I'm not doing it. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm betting for, or part of me sort of wants them to lose to Virginia because I've got to bet on it. Like, no way. I'm not betting the under. I'm not betting the under on Virginia Tech.
Would never do that. So, all right, two more teams then. Let's get to Miami. Miami over under is 10. This team was 9-3 last year.
Yeah, that's a crazy number to me. I'm going under. Only because, I mean, so I texted you earlier asking, just confirming that if a bet pushes, if it's exactly 10, I don't lose the bet, right? I don't know if I wanted to make sure that it was, you know, the same situation like a normal bet. So for this bet to hit, for the over to hit, they'd have to go 11-1. That's crazy. You can't bet on Miami going 11-1. I'm with you. I think their results last year were very much inflated because of some turnover luck. And that's just something that is not sustainable over time. Their S&P Plus projection, 9.3 wins. I think 9-3 again is spot on. You know, you've got LSU, FSU, at Boston College, at Georgia Tech, at Virginia Tech, all very losable games. I mean, even Carolina under Fedora has played Miami tough every single year.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think they're going to win this year, but point being, I think Miami's 9-3. I think they take a step back this year. I think some of those turnovers start to even out. I think 9-3 is a really good number. I'm taking the under.
Yeah, I don't understand the strong desire by everybody who follows college football for Miami to be great. I mean, yes, is college football better when Miami's great? Yes, but we're trying to make it happen before it's really time. And that happened last year. I mean, Miami barely escaped against a lot of average teams. I mean, they needed a miracle to beat Florida State. They needed a late game a miracle against Georgia Tech. They struggled against Syracuse. They struggled against North Carolina. I mean, now to their credit, they played their best games in the games where everyone was watching, in the middle of the season. They dominated Virginia Tech. They blew the doors off of Notre Dame. And people remember that. But when people weren't watching, or when not as many people were watching, they were an average team. I said it all year, and I think I was proven right when they went in to play Clemson and I mean, clearly, just weren't even in the same atmosphere as the Tigers. So when people want to say, is the U back? The U will be back when they're putting half their team in the NFL draft every year, and they're contending for national championship. I mean, legitimately contending, not making it to a conference championship game and losing by 35. They were the team doing that to everybody else when they were in their prime. This team still got a ways to go. Mark Richt has done a great job, but they're still not for them to be a top 10 team in the preseason. That is so outrageous. And like you said, for them to get over 10 wins, they would have to go 11-1. LSU has a lot of problems.
Right.
But let's not act like Miami's going to walk in and beat LSU automatically in Arlington. I mean, that LSU still has plenty of talent on that team. Miami's favored. They should win. But to me, that's a toss-up. Yeah. I lean towards Miami.
Yeah. Just look. I mean, with this one, I look at it. What's more likely, 9-3 or 11-1?
9.
And 9-3. And so with 10-2 being your push range, I mean, I like the under here.
Yeah,
I think that's a good bet.
They go to Georgia Tech, they go to Virginia Tech. I mean, I think they could easily lose one of those two games as good as they are. So, yeah, I'm with you. Miami, I'll go under. Clemson. Finally, we get to Clemson. They're at 11.
Yeah. Yeah,
so they have to go undefeated to go over.
Yeah, but I mean, can you go under? They're not going 10-2. I don't think they're going 10-2. I don't think I can bet the under here. I think I have to go over. I don't necessarily think they're going 12-0 either, but I couldn't bet on Clemson losing two games this year. I think they're going to be really good. That defensive line is historically good.
Right.
I am of the belief that that matters a lot. There might be some stats out there that show otherwise, but I think they're just going to absolutely wreak havoc on teams. They have an NFL defensive line.
Right.
So I just think 12-0 is more likely than 10-2. There are some games that they could lose at A&M, I guess, at FSU. Yep. NC State is one in your mind they could lose. Someone like Wake or Boston College or Georgia Tech could surprise them. To your point, they've had a game like that every year where someone sneaks up on them. But I just think that defense is going to be so good, and there is enough talent on offense, a lot of talent on offense. I think they go 11-1 again, but I think 12-0 is more likely than 10-2.
I see that. If you ask me, yeah, I mean, what's more likely? Probably 12-0, but not a lot of teams go undefeated.
No, I know.
It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen nearly as much as you think, and it's easy. Yep. I mean, a lot of people sit here. I'm as guilty of it as anybody. I mean, we sit here in August and we look and we're like, oh well, they're ranked number two. They're better than everyone they play. They probably are going to go undefeated. It just doesn't happen. I mean,
right.
these are. Even at Clemson, these are 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. And it's really hard for kids to stay focused week in and week out and play up to their ability every week. And they're everyone's Super Bowl. Everybody has Clemson circled on the calendar as the game of the year. NC State has the talent, especially on offense, to beat them. Florida State, like I just said, you know how I feel about them. I think they have the talent to beat them. They've lost a game as three touchdown favorites. As three touchdown favorites, they have lost each of the last 2 years. Now, You could play devil's advocate and say that they've learned from those mistakes and Dabo doesn't want to let that happen again. But they already let it happen a second time. So what's to say they can't let it happen a third? It's really hard when everybody is pumping you up week in and week out not to suffer a letdown at some point.
Right.
It's just different. I mean, even Alabama. Alabama's won one national championship where they went undefeated. When everybody's telling you how great you are every week. Think about the mindset of a teenager when you're being told that every week, how you're the best thing. Nobody can stop you. You're going to lose a game. And to me, I don't think Clemson goes 12-0 as awesome as they are. And I can't sit here and tell you that I guarantee you which game they're going to lose. But they're going to lose a game. I think they lose a game. And if that's the case, I can't go over. And do I think they could lose possibly a second? Sure. I mean, it wouldn't absolutely shock me if somehow they lose both games against NC State and Florida State, especially if Kelly Bryant ends up being the quarterback. I think Kelly Bryant is fine when you're playing against Wake Forest and Boston College and 90% of the teams on your schedule. But when you play a team that forces you to put up points and especially forces you to beat you with Kelly Bryant's arm, I mean, Alabama obviously showed they're a special case, but Alabama showed he can't do it.
Right.
I'm with you. I mean, look, Clemson has a lot of talent, but
that line is forcing me into, like, the Princess Bride Battle of the Wits right now. Well, nobody goes undefeated, so clearly I can't take the over. But I don't see two losses on here, so clearly I can't take the under. So I'm just gonna go ahead and poison both glasses, get Todd Furman on the phone, and we're taking 11-1 on the nose again.
We didn't even mention South Carolina. I mean, South Carolina is not, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
They're not a title contender, but South Carolina is good. It is at Clemson, but South Carolina is a sneaky team. So
yeah.
There's a lot of teams in here that's like somebody is going to beat them. So I would not bet the over. We don't have the juice on these lines. I haven't seen them, but I would imagine the juice is on the under.
The over. Yes. Over at least where I pulled this from is even versus minus 120
exactly.
For the under.
That would make sense. But I think it's very hard to go undefeated. That's just reality. Even teams like Alabama, they lose a game. It happens. So I will go tepidly under. Don't place a lot of money on it, but I could see Clemson going under 11 wins just based on history, not because of anything I think specifically to Clemson. Just not too many teams go 12-0. So, well, Ross. We kept it just a hair under 45 minutes.
Did we really?
No, it was an hour and 10.
Wait a minute. That doesn't seem right at all.
Nope. Right before, you guys don't know this, but before we were recording, I told Ross, we'll keep it to a brief 45. We went about a half hour over that.
We said 2 minutes per team and then spent like 10 on UNC and UVA.
We give the people what they want, Ross.
Who doesn't want that?
I don't know. I think our loyal listeners will enjoy it. Yeah. But hey, we've kept them long enough. Rossi Three Sacks officially on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's the big news out of this this entire show.
God, that was like an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, we almost forgot.
Yeah, wow. Okay, yeah, follow me. I have Rossi Three Stacks with an X.
Three Stacks with an X. So there you go. All right, Ross. Well, hey, you know what? You take care out there. I'm proud of you. And we'll talk to you in just a couple of weeks.
Proud of you too, fella. Do it again soon.
See ya.